Welcome to another discussion with one of our expert partners. Before we get into the main conversation, here are a few sound bites to give you a feel for the topics we touch on. Hope you enjoy it, and feel free to suggest other topics or ideas you would like us to discuss in the future.
The first point that I wanted to bring up is probably a bit controversial in parts, but also certainly something that we can observe in other industries as of right now. Basically, it's personalized pricing versus what we are doing currently still in the hotel industry, which is publicly transparent rates to a large extent. And the question behind it is obviously, where should our industry go with that? And which sort of implications would it have for revenue management in itself and for the profession, obviously? In theory, personalized pricing could actually be something that is actually doable for us, because we are sitting on large amounts of data. We know how guests behave. We know which loyalty tiers they are coming in, what the willingness to pay is also in most of the cases. And it's sort of, for me, like the logical evolution of revenue management in our space.
The limitation is where people start to feel that it's not fair. So there's a fine line between personalization, discrimination, and finding it fair for everyone. I don't know if you follow me here. Yeah. In a way that it really depends on which attribute you will personalize your pricing and your offers. If it's based on gender, for example, I don't find it very fair. If it's based on country, which is actually the case everywhere, again, I don't find it fair either, but there's some differences. So the line between true personalization and discrimination, we need to be very careful.
How does someone react if just a conversation comes up and they realize they're sitting in exactly the same room next to somebody else, they happen to meet at a bar, somebody's paying 100 euros more than somebody else just because maybe their search history or where they live or their address has triggered it, that the hotel should charge them a premium? I kind of get it from a revenue maximization perspective. I kind of don't get it from a point of, hold on a minute, we're still about hospitality and guests.
I mean, that's a topic which I've been pondering and reflecting a lot in the last few months. I won't say years, but it's actually quite for a while. It's more about those kind of work-life boundaries. The kind of the buzzword is work-life balance, but more is more about boundaries. Okay. But I realize that by being drained, you start to lose clarity into your decision making. You start to be a bit tired, then you start to be sick. So you need to be careful. You need to balance this. So it's not a sprint; it's a marathon. And to win a marathon, you need to maintain a pace, not too fast, because if you go too fast, you just burn out.
If we put it in simple words, like that always-on mentality, if it is a default behavior, obviously it's bad. It's bad for anyone. In that respect, if it's situational or deliberate, and you're helping out in a crisis, if I don't know, you work on a deal that is on the line, you want to retain a client where you know something goes south within a day or something, or you have in your own company you have an urgent revenue drop and you need to work against it, obviously, yeah, you got to be on, right? There's no other choice, and it has so much to do also with with leadership at the end of the day, right? Because you can only be obviously a good leader. And now in, let's say, in our roles, obviously, where we're leading people, where we're leading a team as well, true leadership is also defined by how well you lead yourself as a person, right?
With the speed of technology and AI, with everything happening quicker and faster, and there's this, everyone talks about greater productivity. No one is actually talking about, okay, it should give us more time to ourselves. It's like if I am producing enough in a week for my pay, then if I can suddenly do that in 4 days, do I not get a day off? Because I'm just more efficient or effective. But you know, the argument is going to be, well, no, we could just be more productive. We could generate more revenue. Let's pick up on our third question and the final question. Thibaut, you could talk about this, but I'll tee it up because I happen to be reading an article, and I don't know, your name got mentioned on it, but the article was saying that their recent numbers are showing an increase in direct bookings, which correlates with a decline from booking.com.
I mean, for me, that's more like a trend we are seeing across the portfolio, where this year, suddenly 80 to 90% of our portfolio has been down on booking.com compared to last year. Okay. And we saw a shift from booking.com towards Expedia, for example, where we saw a big uplift on Expedia, much less on Booking, but much more Expedia.
Let's say like this, as a broader observation, I think we've also seen that year to date, there are some markets, or at least some hotels in some markets, where we've seen Booking.com production going backwards on last year. However, what I'm not entirely sure about is obviously if that sort of business that fell away from Booking is then being made up with Expedia or any other OTAs, or if that is really going into the direct distribution pocket.
Now, one reason which I could buy on the why Booking.com is dropping is because the number of listings for apartments on Booking.com just went crazy this year.
Well, I hope those clips gave you a sense of what the conversation is all about. Let's get into it.
Hi, both. Good to see you again for another episode of this. Well, I started calling it 3+3+3 because I thought three bald men might be like a bit derogatory, but here we are again. Three bald men.
Exactly.
So we're going to kick off again as we did last time. Format's exactly the same for those that are watching and listening. We've got a couple of points that we're going to pick up on. We're just going to randomly discuss it, and hopefully in amongst there, there's going to be something of interest that will keep people listening, watching, and prove some value. So let's kick it off. Veit, got a point from you. So do you want to just introduce it, tee it up for us, and then we'll run into it?
Exactly. Then we run into it. The point, hello, everyone, first of all, welcome back. But the first point that I wanted to bring up is probably a bit controversial in parts, but also certainly something that we can observe in other industries as of right now, basically. It's personalized pricing versus what we are doing currently still in the hotel industry, which is publicly transparent rates to a large extent. And the question behind it is obviously, where should our industry go with that? And which sort of implications would it have for revenue management in itself and for the profession, obviously? Now, maybe to just give a bit of flesh on the bones, where are we actually? Like, in my opinion, I think what's called personalization, as the term is flying around, you know, numerous times and also for a while already in hotels. For me, this is mostly, let's say, sort of segmentation with lipstick. So we have mobile only rates, we have member rates, OTA versus direct, loyalty tiers, geo-targeting. But like, I feel true personalized pricing down to a one-to-one approach, basically, that barely exists. And I haven't seen any examples, unless you have, Thibaut, maybe. But this is the feeling that I have. But in theory, personalized pricing could actually be something that is actually doable for us, because we are sitting on large amounts of data. We know how guests behave. We know which loyalty tiers they are coming in, what the willingness to pay is also in most of the cases. And it's sort of, for me, like the logical evolution of revenue management in our space. And we've just recently seen examples, for example, from Delta Airlines trying that personalized approach, obviously with the help of AI. There's surely also a couple of examples in retail where that actually works. But I do feel we're in a bit of a tricky spot, and maybe it's worth asking what would hold us back actually to go into that direction of personalized pricing in hotels.
I believe it needs to be fair for everyone. I think the limitation is where people start to feel that it's not fair. So there's a fine line between personalization, discrimination, and finding it fair for everyone. I don't know if you follow me here. Yeah. In a way that it really depends on which attribute you will personalize your pricing and your offers. If it's based on gender, for example, I don't find it very fair. If it's based on country, which is actually the case everywhere, again, I don't find it fair either, but there's some differences. So the line between true personalization and discrimination, we need to be very careful. But again, if you look at the example of Ryanair or any like kind of low cost airlines, what they do is that if you need to add more services, then that's personalized to you, and you will pay a higher price because you added more services. So it's fair because you pay more, but you get more. So for me, I think the line between this, it needs to be accepted. It needs to be fair and not go into the line of discrimination. But again, dynamic pricing and personalized pricing, I think it's highly relevant. But it needs to be accepted and fair for everyone. That's my point.
Yeah. I think it also has to do with like differing definitions of what personalization actually means, right? I mean, the example of Ryanair that you just brought is one thing how you can see personalization, because you have something that is obviously not discriminating anyone, but then also gives the ability for everyone basically to tailor the offer or let's say the end price to whatever they need in terms of services also. Whereas if we're thinking about true personalization with the understanding of one-to-one, you would obviously look at a price X for that person with that sort of history and that sort of behavior, and a price Y for someone else with probably the same service requirements, same understanding of what the value of the property is that it is going to go to, but obviously a different history in, let's say, purchasing power and loyalty and stuff like this. So it's different definitions of what personalization could mean. And I think one other piece that could hold us away, obviously, from, you know, going into that one-to-one direction is, I mean, we're in a bit of a tricky spot, especially also with technology, because most PMSs or RMSs, they are simply not ready to actually serve like dynamic individualized pricing at scale. Because they are built around segments, they are built around rate codes, right? And this is what obviously would fall away if you go into that direction of one-to-one pricing. And yeah, consumer trust, as you said, is certainly the other thing.
you see, like I'm giving the example, like more popular examples, like Spotify. See, if Spotify will charge me the more than you guys for exactly the same service, I will find it. I will complain. I will say like there's something wrong because I'm bold or because like I'm French or whatsoever. But you see,
we're paying a premium,
But that's because I don't find it fair. And I think that the transparency on what is base, and so maybe I'm not in a good job actually, because revenue manager needs to take those kind of opportunities and advantages. But I always put myself in the shoes of the guests and the customers. And if I don't find it fair, I think there's something wrong. But yeah, so there's again, it's a balance. It's a balance between finding those kind of opportunities, personalization, making sure you do your segmentation correctly. But again, if it's publicly compare, if you're able to compare publicly and not from an opaque way, and if you're able to have a bit more transparency to understand and to accept it, I don't think there's any issue. But it needs to be all fully opaque, so you cannot compare apples to apples. Or if it's publicly available, it needs to be very transparent.
From my perspective, I don't know. I think there'd be a lot of kickback on it. I mean, I can remember we both use, you know, all three of us use various apps for our fitness. And I know there was a point about a couple of years ago where it came out where they were changing the prices, and the prices were different for every single country. And they were like, why am I paying more, or why are they paying less? It's like, I don't see how that decision has been made. I think also, so you've got a moral perspective. You've then got a technological perspective, and then linked within that technological perspective possibly is, well, what are you basing the decision on, and over what period of time? What is it actually looking at? What am I giving authority to for it to check, to evaluate? I think also what do you have a problem with is that how does someone react if just a conversation comes up and they realize they're sitting in exactly the same room next to somebody else, they happen to meet at a bar, somebody's paying €100 more than somebody else just because maybe their search history or where they live or their address has triggered it, that the hotel should charge them a premium. I kind of get it from a revenue maximization perspective. I kind of don't get it from a point of, hold on a minute, we're still about hospitality and guests. And at what point do we just, and I've always had this thing. It was about 10 years ago. I started the phrase for me internally, revenue per available wallet. And if I could have a little cartoon, it would kind of be hotels. And actually you just got walking wallets walking around. And that's sometimes the perception that you kind of feel you get. And to me, personalized pricing feels a bit as if we stop looking at the individual as a guest and we're just looking at how much revenue can we generate from that individual. And I wonder how that would play out on many different levels. And that's my view from a revenue manager.
The big thing, in my opinion, and that's the issue with society as such, I'm trying to explain a bit, is that we are trying to manage everything based on Excel spreadsheet and data. And we are becoming like an AI-driven society. And we need not to forget that we are human to human. We are making business with human, we are serving humans, and we are serving guests. So the customer-centric in everything we do needs to be at the focus and at the attention of everything. That's something we don't need to forget. And I do believe a lot of companies are starting to forget this. And customers and guests are not stupid. And they will start to fight back and boycott the companies who are not looking at those kind of customer interest. Now, customer personalization, meaning like, for example, if you push me an offer because you know that I love, I'm supporting Benfica in Portugal and you want to sell me tickets to see the game. Yes, I love it. And I will pay more because I'm a fan of this. And that was exactly targeted for me, personalized offer exactly for me. And I'm happy to pay. And now if you charge me more because I'm based in Vienna and I'm French or an expat, whatever, then I will complain. You know what I mean? Personalized is more like you look at my interest, what I love, and then you push those kind of pricing and offers to me based on my interest, but not based on the data that you have. This is the difference.
So I think what I would take away is that, I think we somehow all agree that we'll never see, let's say, sort of 100% transparency around pricing, but we'll also never see like a full personalization at the end of the day. It's something where we're going to be meeting or let's say where a middle ground somehow is forming. And that would probably mean segmentation is going to get sharper. So it's going to be more based on interest, more based on loyalty, booking window, obviously different metrics that we all know, device, channel, whatever. And I think the hotels that will come out on top actually and playing that game are those who actually start experimenting with different dynamic pricing approaches. It's going to be staying dynamic pricing in that version, but obviously it's probably going to be a more loyalty, more interest driven, more conversion driven, most probably at all.
I think,
what we're going to be heading to now.
And I think your point about people trialing things, I think we will probably see a degree of personalized pricing because someone will try it.
Yeah, someone will.
And then we'll see how the response is. I think we could enter. I mean, we've spoken before a couple of years ago, I know, Vite, about, you know, attribute based selling and actually breaking down. So, you know, if you start like Ryanair, you know, the fundamental point being, okay, you're paying for a seat.
Yeah.
Everything else you want above and beyond that, you can pick and choose what you want, how much of it you want, and personalize the services that you wish to access. So I think I could see a direction of travel where that could go. And you have your standard room price and then all of those additional factors where you could actually personalize the facilities that you want to utilize. I can see how that would develop, and that probably should be something that is already being done. I mean, that's how we do that with lots of other things in the world. I then think you've got that second layer on top that you mentioned, Thibaut, which is then, okay, has this guest been with us before? What can we learn about them? How can we actually now personalize the stay, and maybe there'll be some marrying up that you'll see as well if they start selecting certain attributes that they're prepared to pay for with experiences that you've seen you've had with them. That might give you, you know, maybe some funky algorithm would make a connection about, okay, push this incentive or push this offer. But I think you kind of have the hotel side, which is its features and its functions, and then the individual side, which is that individuality of promotions and tying up with local events or that may be going on. And I could see that being a level of personalization that puts the individual in control and the engagement with the hotel. So you're feeling you're being welcomed as a guest and thought about as an individual. That I could totally get behind. That to me seems sensible, good revenue management, good maximizing, gives that sense of you being valued and important to them. I think that's where I could see the personalization piece going from my side, from the outside looking in.
Wow. Good points.
Makes sense?
Thank you. Yeah, sure.
Thibaut, you had a question that you wanted to pose. So throw it out to our audience, throw it out to us. What do you got?
Yeah, I mean that's a topic which I've been pondering and reflecting a lot in the last few months. I won't say years, but it's actually quite for a while. It's more about those kind of work-life boundaries. Okay, the kind of the buzzword is work-life balance, but more is more about boundaries. Okay,
yeah.
And of course, in consulting, but as well in working remotely. But of course, that's applicable for pretty much everything in business. My question is more about: is always on and the client responsiveness actually a strength or a recipe for burnout? I can tell you my point of view after my reflection, but I will love to hear from you guys.
Yeah. So just clarify that. So that's about as a consultancy, whether you are just always there at the beck and call of the client 24/7, 365.
Even with as a revenue manager, because revenue it's something which is always ongoing. And when I'm finishing, I'm preparing already for the next 365 days ahead, even more in advance. So it's never ending. Okay.
There's
always something, and the email are always full. So the question is more: is it good to remain always on, always available, or is it just a recipe for burnout?
Interesting. Vitally interested in your
yeah. I see your question. You surely also have a couple of things to say on that. I think you can see that from different angles. If I'm defining always on for me to say I need to be always on for any client requests coming in, and then also answer them in a timely manner, let's say within a few hours or so. Then that would certainly be something that drains me a lot, and that would be a recipe for burnout. If always on, however, means, and this is how I try to handle it for myself at least, and which is also something that we spoke about here internally at Berner Becker, to say, there's nothing wrong about, thinking about work every now and then, even though you're not, let's say, in service right now. Mm-hmm. And that means being aside from the client work that you do, but more like, when you have your best ideas coming, when you're standing under the shower, obviously, and you take the effort and note them down just after you step out of the shower. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's just if I would ever be in the situation to be urged by clients try and be always on for them, I would make a hard stop there, because that is something that drains my energy, and that is certainly not healthy in that respect. That's what I can think of right now.
I think that's relevant. What about you, Trevor? Can you add on this?
I'd be interested in your perspective. I do have some thoughts.
For me, I've been fighting a lot with those kind of boundaries, because at the very, very beginning of the company, I was always on. Really, like always on, day and night, 360, 365. I didn't take any days off, any holidays for at least 4 to 5 years. But I realized that at some point I was just drained. And the more you don't put any boundaries, the more you reply, the more clients ask. And that's also applicable for GMs, owner, and so on when you're on property. So the more you give, the more they ask. Okay. So if you give this, the guy asks for this, and so on. Okay. So I was kind of resisting saying no, because if I was saying no, I didn't want to piss anyone off, and I just wanted to be available and make them happy. But I realized that by being drained, you start to lose in clarity into your decision making. You start to be a bit too tired, then you start to be sick. So you need to be careful. You need to balance this. So it's not a sprint; it's a marathon. And to win a marathon, you need to maintain a pace, not too fast, because if you go too fast, you just burn out. And that's also what I'm teaching myself, and I'm still like a Padawan in this way. But nowadays, I say no by default, and just to leave space for the big yes. So it's more about energy management and making sure if I spend my time and my energy should be on the right thing, where I add value and where I'm good at. Because if I spend time on things which I'm not good at, or maybe someone in my team is actually better than me, that doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I'm also teaching the team at Kata Consulting to have very strict boundaries with the team, with a client, to say, of course, to be always on for true emergency. That's also a very good point, because sometimes it seems everything is an emergency, which is not. So clearly define with your client and with your team kind of the level of priorities and the level of emergencies. Okay, my PMS is off and completely offline. That's an emergency, of course.
Sure.
Upload this one. We need to do it tomorrow, or we need to do it in the next hour. That's not an emergency. That's still important, but not a true emergency. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think those kind of boundaries are very important. And when I ask my team on Slack, when I see them online after hours, I told them like disconnect and do something else.
Because Why are you online at this time?
Yeah. I'm checking if they're online. So actually, maybe after checking the podcast, people will play me this.
Reiterate.
Who are you?
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? And that's important. Like the same in Japan, when I was working in Japan, people were just had this kind of mindset of staying always on until the boss leaves, that they don't want to leave before. Mm-hmm. But actually, it was counterproductive with their own mindset, their own productivity, their own efficiency for the company. I think we need to find the right balance, being very focused on what is important, where we add value, and focus our energy on this. And that's, for me, the most important. But it all starts by educating the client as well, that we are not always on, because we want to remain on for the right things at the right time. And then putting clear boundaries with everyone.
Yeah. Correct, and I'm totally with you. And it has so much to do also with leadership at the end of the day, right? Because you can only be obviously a good leader. And now in, let's say, in our roles, obviously, where we're leading people, where we're leading a team as well, true leadership is also defined by how well you lead yourself as a person, right? And if you don't make room for, what makes you happy, what gives you energy instead of what is draining your energy, if you don't make time for rest, if you don't make time for family and friends, and if you're always in that always on mindset, I think it's just also has kind of bad consequences basically for what you're doing in that team environment. And so for me, it's clear, like I have my boundaries and there's one or the other email that I answer late at night, but otherwise it's what it is.
It's very fun because I had a discussion recently with some AI expert in Zurich, and I told them on one-on-one saying if I want to implement AI in my company, where should I start? And they all replied, actually, before going into AI, be very clear and work on yourself, making sure you have the right culture, making sure you are aligned with what you are doing. Because a lot of companies now, they deploy AI, a lot of tools and so on. They want to increase productivity. Instead of replying to emails in 5 hours, they reply in 1 hour or 30 minutes. Well done, bravo. But they can do this in a very short period of time. And then everything crash and the company is gone.
Yeah.
So you need to be very careful with tools or processes, or being always on and being always like bang, 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 which is important, don't get me wrong, but not too much bang, bang, bang. If not, we will crash and burn. And again, it's more a marathon and less than a sprint. And that's important in everything we do.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It's an interesting question. Poses many strands that you can pull on it. Because I guess looking at it, both of you have been involved in businesses starting up. So, when you are breaking into a market, I think there's a tendency to always over service because you also want to retain that your new customer. You want them to be happy. They're the voice that helps you win other business. You have a pride. But ironically, the first time you start hiring your first person or your team, you wouldn't want them doing the same thing that you were doing, and you would want to treat them differently and make sure that they're having the balance. And sometimes that can ensure that you're maybe reflecting on yourself to find balance. I think it also comes down as well. I wonder if there is this tendency with the speed of technology and AI, with everything happening quicker and faster, and there's this, everyone talks about greater productivity. No one is actually talking about, okay, it should give us more time to ourselves. It's like, if I am producing enough in a week for my pay, then if I can suddenly do that in 4 days, do I not get a day off? Because I'm just more efficient or effective. But you know, the argument is going to be, well, no, we could just be more productive. We could generate more revenue. You could earn more bonus, whatever it may be. So
retire earlier.
Yeah, well, possibly. No. So that comes down. No. So that comes back in my mind to leadership, culture, values, about setting expectation with your customers, your clients, what they should get from you. You know, your point about emergencies, what constitutes an emergency? Well, it's like if you're ill, isn't it? You know, you kind of get triaged and you go to the hospital, they'll triage you and then you'll wait in a queue and they'll take care of the one that's the most serious emergency. Well, if in your business, you've identified what you constitute as an emergency, and your clients and customers are clear what that emergency is and how you respond to it, well, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to always be on, because that would trigger a response that is appropriate because that's what you've defined. I think in answer to your simple question, I remember a quote once, and I won't try and attribute who it is because I can't remember, but if someone said, if I had 5 hours to chop down a tree, I'd spend the first 2 hours sharpening the axe. And unless we take that time out to have that space to think, to breathe, to process our day, for our brain to logically structure it so that we can then do something with it at an appropriate time, then all we're doing by being on all the time, we may as well be driving down a motorway or an autobahn at 100 miles an hour. Man, it might seem fun to start with if the road's not very busy, but if you've got to keep going and it starts getting a bit crazy, that becomes pretty stressful, and there's probably an accident about to happen at some point soon. So where do you find the time to slow down, to pause, to breathe, and to break? And I think part of it is that communication. And I actually think you can win and retain clients, you know, from a consultancy point of view, if you're honest with them and say, these are the values we have. We will not let an emergency happen to you, but we won't necessarily respond within an hour, because we're not using AI to just send you an email response that's generic. I'll make sure one of your team that's supporting you responds, but it will be considered, and they are a human being, and we want to make sure that they have a life as well, and they can be with their friends and family, so that when they're working for you, they are at their optimum performance, because that's your responsibility as a leader to make sure that they're there to support the customers. So it's more general than specific viewpoints, but that's kind of how
Yeah. What I just take away from me is obviously, if we put it in simple words, like that always on mentality, if it is a default behavior, obviously it's bad. It's bad for anyone in that respect. If it's situational or deliberate and you're helping out in a crisis, if, I don't know, you work on a deal that is on the line, you want to retain a client where, you know, something goes south within a day or something, or you have in your own company, you have an urgent revenue drop and you need to work against it, obviously, you got to be on, right? There's no other choice in a way. And I feel if you openly communicate about that, also from the very get-go, if you in liaison with a new client, for example, there's a whole other level of understanding, and there's also something that you can always refer back to, mm-hmm. right? If you should ever find yourself in a situation that doesn't go according to this. Mm-hmm. It's all about transparent guardrails, I think.
Setting the boundaries and setting up the right expectation from the beginning.
Yeah.
Making sure it's discussed mm-hmm. and so on. And to your point as well, Trevor, I do believe with a team and even for us, we're quite a small team, but we are focusing much more on the output than the input. So in a way that if you do your job in 1 hour a day and everyone is happy and the performance is on the roof, I don't care.
Yes.
So that's pretty, but if this hotel is underperforming in distress and you need to spend 12 hours a day on this one, that may be worth it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's more on the output than the input, and then it's up to you to manage your time. But I'm a big believer that by focusing on the right thing, by purposely slowing down, you can actually service the customer and the guest better. Because you when you do something, you do it with 100% of your attention. And if you do too many things at the same time and you're always on and so on, you do a bit of everything, but nothing really fully dedicated to it at 200%. So that's more of this kind of energy management, which is important for everyone, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, some interesting points in that. Let's pick up on our third question and the final question. Thibaut, you can talk about this, but I'll tee it up because I happen to be reading an article, and I don't know, your name got mentioned on it. But the article was saying that their recent numbers are showing an increase in direct bookings, which correlates with a decline from booking.com. I guess my question is this a one-off or is it a trend, and what are the factors behind it? But do you just want to tee this up a bit for us and what this article was about and what you were highlighting?
Yeah. I mean, for me, that's more like a trend we are seeing across the portfolio, where this year, suddenly 80 to 90% of our portfolio has been down on booking.com compared to last year. Okay. And we saw a shift from booking.com towards Expedia, for example, where we saw a big uplift on Expedia, much less on Booking, but much more Expedia. Direct booking, that was an angle on the article, which I agree, but I didn't agree much. We saw it, but not as
so big. It's less an OTA direct and more a specific booking that your booking.com issue you're noticing.
Yes. Okay. And I was wondering if it was only me and booking.com that maybe don't like me and targeting my portfolio specifically, or if it was a trend across Europe. And we did some survey. It seems it's not only me, hopefully, but I'm not sure about Veit and the rest of the portfolio.
Yeah, no. Let's say like this, as a broader observation, I think we've also seen that year to date, there are some markets, or at least some hotels in some markets, where we've seen booking.com production going backwards on last year. However, what I'm not entirely sure about is obviously if that sort of business that fell away from Booking is then being made up with Expedia or any other OTAs, or if that is really going into the direct distribution pocket. Mm-hmm. Now, saying that, I know obviously of examples that we work together on very closely, so us as a company together with our clients, where we've been on purpose, obviously, driving business away from booking.com and try and direct this more towards the direct channel. But then obviously also have underlying help with digital marketing activities and so on. Because otherwise, you're not going to be in that place actually on making that, let's say, purposeful shift, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's super early to say if that's a one-off or a trend. I know, obviously, if we're thinking about, you know, developments coming up in agentic AI and then probably also seeing the first couple of first mover hotels probably having their own, let's say, agent in a way with, you know, the ability to connect to different systems via APIs and making it available also for individual searchers or guests, potential guests, to basically book direct via generative AI, let's say engines. That might also mean that there could be more shift happening away from booking.com towards the direct channel. But then again, I think also with Booking.com and any of the other OTAs, they are probably in the better spot, actually, bringing a bit of movement in that direction, and probably going to eat the bigger piece of the cake rather than the individual hotels, if they ever come to that point. So I don't really know if that's a one-off or a trend right now. Might be on purpose, driven by actions of the hotels. Might otherwise also be just something that is observed.
Yeah. What did you see, Thibaut, when you were, you obviously contributed to the article.
First of all, I do believe there's a big impact on the ChatGPT and all those kind of agentic search, where people are using more ChatGPT than Google. So that may have an impact on the people who are on Booking.com spending on Google ads and so on. There is a shift happening. That's clear everywhere. Mm-hmm. Now, one reason which I could buy on the why Booking.com is dropping is because the number of listings for apartments on Booking.com just went crazy this year. So that's kind of diluting. That's my perspective. I don't know if it's real or not. That's diluting the overall demand for hotels who have been here for a while. So now if you look at a search for London, before you had a lot of hotels, now you get kind of a mix between apartments, a serviced apartment, long stays, and hotel. So maybe the demand overall from Booking.com remains the same, but there is kind of a dilution for hotels, and the one who have been relying a lot on Booking see this kind of share being decreased. And then you have other players who actually are maybe doing a better job on marketing, or who didn't do this kind of dilution, such as Expedia. And Expedia right now is getting market share, in my opinion.
How would you see Airbnb, obviously with the change of their compensation model, playing into all of that?
Well, Airbnb now is becoming a Booking.com.
Airbnb moving into the hotels or something earlier this week or last week?
Saying this for a while, and people didn't believe me. I was saying you see a lot of Airbnb on Booking.com, and reverse, you see a lot of hotels on Airbnb. That has been used by a lot of hotels in the past, and now I do believe it start to accelerate. So again, distribution in hotels, it was the Wild Wild West. It's still the Wild Wild West, just more chaotic. Yeah. And every day is becoming more and more chaotic. So trying to keep up to speed, but it's tough.
I think it's interesting as well. We've done a couple of videos with Mirai. Javier has been very much involved with representing or part of the voice in the discussion that's going on with the EU around the Digital Markets Act and the impact that that's having on Google and Booking.com. Obviously have been identified in that to having to comply as well, being the significant majority player in Europe, as opposed to Expedia, which is a much smaller player in how they clarify or the criteria that they apply. So I don't know whether that's having an impact. There's also there's lawsuits going on at the moment, isn't there? There've been a big reach out. I think there's been a big uptake over the last couple of weeks of hotels signing up for this lawsuit that's being brought against Booking.com as well. So you don't know whether that's driving. I don't know whether that would require hotels to have to change their behavior and not be doing things with Booking than necessarily affecting people booking through Booking.com. So I can't quite understand why there would have been that drop off created by those two legal issues that are running. It's an interesting statistic that you flag, and the fact that it is specific to Booking.com. And you saw Expedia was same or more. So it felt.
I was seeing in the articles we saw some properties with more than 300% increase compared to last year. Maybe that's starting from very low.
I just wanted to say, if they come from two room nights, okay.
But it was a big increase.
It's still shifted, gone somewhere else. They're under a bit of pressure from a lot of places at the moment then.
Let's watch this space.
I think it is a bit of a watch this space. I mean, and there wasn't anything, because to your point, right, you know, yes, there are a lot of people, you know, you're seeing a lot written at the moment about putting a lot more effort into trying to drive the direct bookings. But I mean, that conversation has been going on for years and years and years. You know, that can't be a factor in what you saw, Thibaut, because that would have been happening anyhow. I'm not convinced either, and I'm happy to be convinced, and someone can put a comment or whatever they want if I get it wrong. But you know, this whole AI search, where it's pulling from, the people that have the greatest amount of content about any hotel tends to be the OTAs. You know, fishing to pick up a single property in a location somewhere in a country that means it might happen to come up and there it is ready for you to book just feels a bit like a very small needle in a very big haystack. And so I actually, from what I've read, conversations I've had, it still feels as if it's falling in one of two camps. But I kind of wonder if the laziness, in a sense, of these ChatGPTs, Perplexities, Geminis, just you know, scanning the web, it's going to pull stuff in from Booking and Expedia and then Airbnb. And so, you know, is it going to drive direct bookings? And didn't I see something? Wasn't it one of them? Was it Booking was doing something with TikTok that had something where they could be booking straight through from TikTok?
Mm. Yeah,
no, I mean that feels it's moving further and further away from
direct bookings,
the direct hotel booking. And that's, you know, as someone who is an advocate for hotels and hoteliers, That's a broader worrying trend that I have about the power of the OTAs. So
that's a discussion for next time. The death of the hotel website.
Yeah, well, could well be. And you teed
it up nicely. We should put this down. Yeah,
you teed it up nicely for us to make a note of that. We'll wrap this one up and have that for our next conversation. Three very interesting topic, guys. I love the directions these conversations take us in. But really appreciate your time. Look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thank you.
Take care.
See you guys.
Ciao.
Thank you for listening, and I hope the conversation was of interest. Please do feel free to suggest any topics you would like discussed in the future. We're always open to ideas. Thank you once more, and I hope you will join us again. Goodbye for now.